Hey, welcome to the Cardigan Cowboy Podcast, and my name's Taos Hayes. I'm glad you're here. I also just poured me a nice cup of coffee. I like honey. I like honey in my coffee, and I don't really have a stir stick, so I always use my little case pocket knife to stir my honey up in my coffee. And after really giving it a look, I wonder if I need a tetanus shot. Anyway, yeah, it's kind of my thing. I like to go find local honey and put in my coffee. Anybody else do that? I don't know. Anyway, back to the podcast. So, glad you're here with me. And today is very special because I got a bottle of whiskey. And that whiskey's special because it was actually sent to me by our guest. And Miss Emily Elgin, she's pretty cool. And she's really cool now that she sent me some booze. So, we love Emily. But before I get off into what Emily's all about and how this episode's going to bring so much value through your life, I would like to talk about this podcast and how if you are here and listening, you're already supporting it. But if you want to support us above and beyond, you can. And that is go follow us on any social media platform, like our stuff. But as you know, the algorithms, if you're in the social media world, are kind of changing and likes are not what they used to be. They're kind of the old pictures that you used to flip around, I think is Kodak or whatever. I don't even know what I'm trying to say. They're old news. Go follow us. And then how we get spread to new people and new ears is by sharing and commenting and interacting. And so go find us on those social media platforms. Hang out. Also, something really cool that I'm excited to see if it's a tool we could use is by going through Anchor to host our podcast, which means they distribute it through all the different platforms, including the one you're probably listening to this podcast right now. So let's say Apple. When you go to Apple and you pick this episode, you'll see the details. The details are just where we write a little deal about the episode and what it's about. But at the bottom, you'll see two links. And one of those links, the first one, I believe, is a link that you click and it goes to a voicemail to us. That's right. You can just click it, then hit record. So after the episode and you listen, you can just hit record and leave us a voicemail telling us first what who you are, where you're from, and then how the episode impacted you. Good, bad, give us all the feedback. We love it. Tell us your feels. Tell us what's funny. Tell us what's on your mind. And what we get to do is that message actually gets sent directly to the Anchor app and is saved. And so the next episode, we're going to pick out a few and have at the very end of that episode. So maybe, you know, you get some airtime. So, it's kind of cool. It's a way we can give back. It's also a way that we get feedback, and we're only as good as our feedback. We need feedback. So go do that. The second link is really a game changer here. You can click that link and it'll take you to a page that will show that you can donate. It'll give a paragraph to you guys. And in that paragraph, it'll tell you that 50% of everything that we bring in through that subscription will go to a nonprofit. I hate asking for money, but you can click the $1, the $5, the $10 and subscribe, and it goes to support this podcast. The 50% goes off to the nonprofit. Then we're going to use the rest to pay Uncle Sam. And if there's any left over, we're just going to save it and put it back and help maybe pay off some of this debt we've developed through making this podcast. And then maybe one day we can purchase some booths at events or add more equipment or I don't know. Give back to you guys. It's definitely not padding my pockets is what I'm trying to say. So if you are one of those people that have reached out to me and wondered how you could be a part of it and how you could donate and how you could help, we got it now. All you have to do is click that link and it takes like 30 seconds. In fact, my dad was the first one to do it. He went, did it, was nothing. And he did it while I wasn't even there to help him. So anyway, those are ways to give back. And with all that said, I just want to reiterate, you're listening right now. That is all we ever expected. This is all we ever wanted. And anything else is above and beyond and icing on the cake. So with all that said, let's get to Emily. Emily Elgin is a singer-songwriter from Oklahoma who moved to Nashville not knowing a soul. She's also one of the rare few that made it to Hollywood with a golden ticket to American Idol. It was such a pleasure talking to her, and it's great to hear stories of people who have come from nothing. And when I say nothing, this girl comes from some humble beginnings, but she has made it to Nashville. She's rubbing elbows with some of the big dogs, which she talks about in this episode. And one thing that I just pulled from it is her strength as a woman making it on her own, doing her thing. I loved it, man. And she is such a cool person, down to earth. And I think you guys are going to love her. So check out her music. Give her some support. Give her some love. Send us a voicemail if you want. Tell us how much you liked it. And then, you're awesome. She's awesome. We're all going to be awesome. And thank you for being part of this. And I also have to give credit where credit is due. And that is, this episode would have not happened if it wasn't for a man named Paul Stanley. Paul Stanley has a podcast called The Southern Americana, and his first guest was Emily Elgin. He found out about us and thought Emily would be a perfect fit, and so he introduced the two of us. And so this is just a great way to say thank you to Paul. Paul, thank you, thank you, thank you. Thanks for introducing us, and your podcast is amazing. You're just spreading gold. You're like sitting over there on a pot of just golden conversations, and I'm a little jealous. But I'm glad to be able to call you a friend. So thank you, Paul. Be forever indebted to you, and I really appreciate you. Also, we have to give thanks to our sponsor, the Oki brand. They've been with me from the beginning. They're the first ones to call me whenever I just feel like this is going nowhere. There were times I felt like a complete failure, and they were the first ones to call, reach out, amp me up, promote me, and just push me to that next level. So go to the Oki brand. They have an app. They don't have an app. What am I talking about? They have an Instagram that you can go to and go check them out. Click on it and just, you know, shop away. Throw some things in the cart. Put Cardigan Cowboy all lowercase in the promo code. Get you a little 10% discount. And then also, it's unofficial. It's just getting into the works. But we're talking about launching our first piece of merchandise through the Oki brand and making our very first ball cap that you guys hopefully would love to wear. And the Oki brand, they're totally behind it. They're helping design it. And it's unofficial, but if it does happen, like always, it's to raise money. And it's just one step closer to be able to change the world and change people's lives by giving to nonprofits and charities. So thank you to the Oki brand. With that all said, the last thing I want to thank is you, the listener. We wouldn't be here if it wasn't for you. So thank you to the listeners. Thank you for the likers and the commenters and the reviewers and the followers and the subscribers. Just thank you, thank you, thank you. If you're wondering how we are doing, I'll just give you a quick little update. We have more than doubled. We have exceeded 50% growth in the last month on our social media presence. We're about to break 30,000 followers on TikTok, 5,000 followers on Facebook. We did break a huge milestone, 3,000 followers on Instagram. And we're growing. And it wouldn't grow if it wasn't for you. And so thank you, thank you, thank you. You guys are with you. I get to chase this dream. And then I also, I'm going to give you guys all the credit because we're going to change the world. So thank you. If you ever need anything, reach out to us. Give us that feedback. So I'll quit blabbing. Here's Emily Elgin. She's amazing. She's a blessing. And Emily, thank you for making this happen. And boom. Thanks for the whiskey. Leaper Forks, I believe. Leaper Forks Distillery. You guys are awesome. And the whiskey goes great with coffee. Come to find out. And Eddie the Blind Horse, and I are about to go for a little ride through the 6 inches of snow we got yesterday. And you better believe it's accompanying us. Going to keep us warm down in our bellies. So, Emily. All right, I'll shut up. Emily Elgin, guys. Cheers. Hope you enjoy this. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Emily Elgin, welcome to the Cardigan Cowboy Podcast. You made it, and man, tell the people where you're at right now.
I am in Tennessee. I'm in a town called Franklin. It's just right outside of Nashville, south of Nashville. Mm-hmm. And I love it. This is where I've been for 6 years, actually. I recently moved, so I'm sitting on my couch looking at all these boxes that I need to unpack.
Man, moving is never fun. I had a lot of it.
I hate it. I'm so over it. I did do something I've never done this time, though. I hired movers. And I'm glad I did it, but I hustle a lot. Like, I'm just my dad really instilled that in us, just work ethic. So these guys were like unloading the truck and they weren't going fast enough for me. So I was like,
did you tell them, hey, you're not going fast enough?
No, I got in the truck and I was moving all my stuff with them. And they were like, oh, ma'am, you don't have to do this. And I was like, y'all need to hurry up. I'm paying by the hour. Let's go.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. I did hear that the best interviews always start out with a story. And I was fascinated to find out that you actually experienced the American Idol experience. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about that? And like, what was the highs and the lows, did it help you?
Yeah. I would say it absolutely helped me, but probably not in the way that you would expect. I was young. Well, I'm still young, but I was younger, and I was in my early 20s. And I auditioned, and the auditions were in New Orleans, and I was working for Coyote Ugly at the time, and I couldn't afford to go down there. And the CEO of the company just really, she's always supported my music and my managers at the time as well. And so they gave me time off to go along with several other girls who, that was kind of unheard of at the time, because we would have to stagger girls so that you'd have somebody to work. But they let us all off, and we took a van down to New Orleans, and I auditioned, and I made it. There's all these preliminary auditions that you have to go through before you actually get into front of the celebrity judges. And I just kept making it through all of these prelims. And I was like, holy crap, I can't believe this is happening. And then I got, you know, in front of the judges, and that year it was Steven Tyler, Randy Jackson, and Jennifer Lopez. And they gave me my golden ticket to Hollywood. What?
I didn't realize. So you got the golden ticket, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was just that I'll never forget that feeling of just holy shit. What? Just, you know, I just, very indescribable feeling.
What song what song did you sing to get the golden ticket?
I sang a song. Well, you sing several.
Okay.
So the one that I sang that got me through to Hollywood was Nothing Better to Do by Leanne Rimes.
Okay.
It's just a really cool
My
song.
Grammy Lila would be so proud. She loves Leanne Rimes. So
she's
we're
amazing.
Digging. Yeah.
Yes.
What
I'm
happened
a huge
to her?
Leanne Rimes
Man.
Fan. She's actually been making a big comeback. She just released a new record, and it's a lot of just really inspirational music. She's doing some cool stuff right now.
So you get the golden ticket, you're off to mm-hmm. Hollywood.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had to get on a plane to go to Hollywood, and I had flown as an itty bitty little girl. Uh-huh. I'm talking like little, and I kind of remember it, but because my daddy used to work for Delta, he loaded planes. He was a cargo guy, and he mm-hmm. loaded planes. So we would get to fly first class when I was little, but I mean, I was like 4 and 5, so I barely remember it. So this is my first time on a plane as an adult, and I get on the plane, and I was so excited, and I'm like sitting there, and here I am. I'm in my jammies. I'm in like sweats, you know, and I have my pillow with me, and I just am so naive about everything in life, and I'm just excited to be on this plane, and it starts moving. And as soon as it starts moving, I am just struck with fear, just horrible fear of,
oh man,
like, oh my gosh, I'm about to be in this metal box and we're going up in the air and I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah. And it's magic. Nobody knows how it works. I get it.
Exactly.
We're floating in air. I know. And I'll tell you, I've never been scared of flying. And I think it's mainly because I have this wonderful ability just to deny things. Like, I deny the fact we are crashing all the way. I'd be like, no, there's no way. There's no way. You know, like, but I have been extremely hungover. And uh-huh. Oh my gosh, that's the worst. And I'll tell you, the little white throw up bag is never big enough.
You're sitting there,
you're looking at it, your mouth's watering, the seatbelt sign's on. You're like, I gotta get up there. The turbulence.
Oh man, that's hilarious.
So yeah, I can kind of relate. I've been there. I have shown up back in Tulsa, Oklahoma, just green in the face.
Those bags, they really need to to make those
pictures. We got
to
do something different. We got to do.
They really do.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So you make it to Hollywood. You finally do. And you didn't die on the plane. So
I didn't. I got out from the flight from Oklahoma City to Dallas. I'm sure you've flown that a bajillion times as well. And it's very short. And I called Daddy when I got to Dallas. I'm telling you, like, my knees were shaking. I was so just over it, a full blown panic attack. I called Daddy and I was like, Daddy, come get me. I can't do this. Please just drive here. And he was, you know, we lived in Oklahoma, and he said, Emily, you'll be fine. Go to the bar, have a margarita, make it a double, get on your next flight. I was like, okay. And I did, and everything was fine. That next flight was great.
Oh, that's wonderful. So how did they greet you at Hollywood? Did you get any special treatment? Did you get to do anything fun?
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy. I just felt like I was in a movie the whole time. They meet you in Hollywood, and you get on this big bus, and they have, like, you know, your name or whatever on this card, and you're just treated like royalty, you know? And they take you on this bus, and they take you to your hotel, which was the fanciest hotel I'd ever seen, much less ever stayed in. And, you know, there's cameramen everywhere. You get off the bus, and cameras are just in your face, like, constantly. You come out of your hotel room, there's cameras in your face. You can't go anywhere without being filmed. And they're, you know, they feed you, and they had this tea bar, because it's a singing competition. So they have tea set up in this big hall that they had that everybody would gather in, and every kind of tea and honey, just super high end stuff that you could imagine. And I just remember feeling a little bit of imposter syndrome, like, what am I doing? How am I even here? You know, it was just all very
unreal. I just listened to Shawn Mendes on Dax Shepard's podcast, and it was the first time I'd ever heard of this imposter syndrome. And man, I can relate, because this podcast has not got big at all, but I experienced the first time at the NFR, somebody just came up to me randomly and said, man, are you the Cardigan Cowboy? And I just remember being like, looking at him like, wow, like, I've been waiting forever for this, but I didn't expect it so soon. And I just was shocked. And then I almost had that weird, well, I don't think so, but I think he's down the hall, probably, you know, like, that is so weird. And
it's very weird.
Yeah. So
it really is.
And then to own, like, to realize that you put in the work, and this is what it's supposed to be, and to accept that, and you kind of feel bad in a way, and it's kind of weird.
You know, I struggled with feelings of guilt for a long time, after I started getting some traction going, and I felt undeserving, even though I worked my freaking butt off every single day. I mean, just grinding. And people don't see what happens behind the scenes. They think, you know, you sing a song and you record it and that's it. But they don't realize really what goes into it, especially with being an independent artist without major label representation. And I remember the first time someone recognized me off of social media and knew my music and stuff. And they came up to me and they said, I came to your show. I bought your CD and this and this and this. And I'm trying to place this person, because in my mind, I'm still thinking I know them personally, because I knew everybody at that time personally. And I don't have an enormous fan base by any means. But when I realized I had no idea who this person was, it just took me aback. You know, I couldn't even believe that someone liked what I was doing that much to buy my stuff and come up to me and treat me like someone they were excited to meet. It was pretty, it's humbling.
It is.
It's very humbling.
And I think it's so cool. I would rather be the way we are about it than be the opposite. You know, if I got recognized and it was like, oh, you know, yeah, I am the Cardigan Cowboy. Do you want an autograph? And they're like,
yeah.
No, not really. I was just going to tell you, you misspelled some words on your last post. Which happened to me today. I put up a post about the studio, and I asked if your presence, asked people if their presence would be worth sitting in this seat. And I spelt presence like Christmas presents. My gosh. And my favorite Canadian Cody, Cody Foster, he messaged me and just wrote like in Canadian fashion, just wrote presence spelled with a C, like spelled correctly. So I had to actually like think like, what's he talking? Oh no.
Oh, that's so funny.
And so I thought about deleting it. And then I just thought, man, I'm just going to own it. And anybody that says anything, I'm just going to be like, that was a test. You're smart enough to be on the podcast. Welcome to Cardigan Cowboy. So
that's perfect.
Yeah.
That's, you know, it's part of being human. I mess up and do stupid stuff all the time. And then I used to delete it and now I just keep it. And then I'll make another funny post after it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I'm
just
kidding, rocking
guys,
it.
You know,
yeah, it's yeah. autocorrect anyway. To. So,
but yeah, that's what I blame it on too.
Oh man. So you get to Hollywood, you've got the golden mm-hmm. ticket, you got cameras mm-hmm. in your face, you're mm-hmm. getting treated well. How many days were you there?
To be honest, I was only there, three or four days competing. And then I was there a little longer until my flight went out,
okay.
I believe.
And you got the boot.
I did. I got the boot pretty hard, to be honest. It was a tough pill to swallow, but it was, I made a mistake and it was definitely my own fault.
Like sang in the wrong tone or something, or?
No, I sang the wrong song. I sang the same song twice. And what happened was I had made it through some of the prelims and some of the first rounds in Hollywood, and I was feeling really good. And I was going to sing a Bonnie Raitt song called Love Me Like a Man. And it's just this bluesy, amazing, awesome song. If you haven't heard it, you should listen to it today.
Okay.
It's one of my favorites. But I was going to sing that song, and they have this huge bathroom, like the size of a house. And all of the girls would go into this bathroom and warm up because the acoustics were so good. So I was in there, and there was this other contestant, and she heard me warming up with my song, and she came up to me and she said, "Hey, are you sure you want to sing that song like that? Like, are you sure you want to do that song? Ooh. Because the judges said you should do, you know, these songs," or whatever it was. And I had decided to kind of do a little bit of my own rendition. So I walked away with that girl's words in my head, and I let it affect me to the point of when I got up to sing my song, I put that microphone up to my mouth and I sang my audition song again, which was that Lee and Rhyme song that I told you about earlier. And when I got done, they looked at me and they said, "Why did you sing the same song twice?" And I knew I blew it then, because you get one shot. You know, and if you do something like that, they obviously you're not ready to compete or ready to be in the business on that level.
Yeah.
So they didn't push me through, and it was very disappointing, but I learned a lot from that experience, a lot. And also other contestants that moved through were doing the same thing that I was going to do, which was even kind of more insult to injury. But I learned a lot out of that, and not to sound negative, but you know, not everybody's your friend, and learning to separate that is important, and separate it from a loving standpoint is important, and knowing how to conduct yourself in those types of situations in business or, you know, any type of competition that you're in, whatever it is in life. And I walked away with a lot of life lessons from that. And American Idol, funnily enough, is actually how I ended up in Nashville, because when I got kicked off, one of the producers of the show came up to me personally and told me that he loved my voice and that he loved everything, you know, that I was doing, and that he believed in me. And he said, if you want to get serious about music, you need to relocate out of Oklahoma. And he said, you need to go to LA, Nashville, or Austin. So I checked out all three and landed in Nashville like 7 years later. Took me
That's
a while,
awesome.
But I finally did it.
That's great. Before we get into Nashville, because I want to talk about Nashville, kind of been calling my name lately. Mm-hmm. I wanted to dive into the fact that you took complete ownership of the mistake, and you mm-hmm. didn't dwell on it to a point where you felt like it was somebody else's fault. I think that's really right. amazing. And we live in a time right now where people really get stuck and victimize themselves and think that the bad circumstance is going to forever hold them back. And it would have been really easy for you to just feel sorry for yourself and go find a hole to bury yourself in, like I kind of wanted to do when I found out I misspelled some words. But I love that you just owned it and you killed mm-hmm. it and you kept going. And a lot of times, you know, that's what happens in life is we feel like whatever moment we're currently in is the pinnacle, right? It's the mm-hmm. pinnacle of our life.
Absolutely.
And then you forget that it's just a stepping stone. And if you would have went back to the Emily that just did that mistake and was at American Idol and went, you're gonna actually laugh at this and you're gonna build a career off this mistake, you mm-hmm. probably at the moment would have been like, oh, no way. Like, but
right. I never would have believed it.
Never would have believed it. Nope. But here you are and you're killing it. Mm-hmm. And so I just love that. And I think that's the cowboy spirit that we're trying to embody. That
absolutely.
You know, it's, yeah, you need to, if you're a victim, you need to analyze the situation. You need to get yourself out of it. You need to better yourself. And then at the mm-hmm. end of the day, it don't do anybody any good by crying over spilt milk. So, yeah, kudos.
I agree wholeheartedly. You know, part of when I went back home after I got kicked off, I just knew, I was like, oh, my Lanta, so many people were supporting me. So many, they were having watch parties and I only got like, I don't know, 9 seconds of airtime or something. And having to come home with your head down and your tail between your legs it's embarrassing and it's humbling and it's just all of those things. But the people that love you don't care. You know, the people that love you and that truly support you, if you just pick yourself up and say, you know what, this sucked and I didn't get it, but I'm not going to quit. People admire that. It's inspirational and it builds strong character. And if you want to succeed, just like what you were just saying, you cannot be a victim of your situation and your circumstance. You can't, it can't always be somebody else's fault. You know, you've got to be able to stand on your own two feet and decide what kind of life you want and which way you want to go. Because if you have a victim mentality, it's like, you know, spinning your wheels in mud. You're just going to get real dirty and not go anywhere. It's just not going to happen. So
I agree. Okay. So Nashville, I want to talk yeah. about Nashville. The first thing I want to talk about is picking up and moving to a place you don't know anybody. Mm-hmm. Was that mm-hmm. kind of what you do? I do it for my job. I've done it my whole, all my 20s and into my 30s, where I mm-hmm. land these contracts that can be 3 weeks to 3 months. I go to random places in my truck and sometimes a fifth wheel. Currently it's in Minnesota in a horse trailer. And
nice.
With a horse named Eddie, who's blind. But
what he's blind?
He's blind in one eye. He is. He's blind in his left eye.
You rope off him?
I do. It's his blind side's his left side. So yeah, he can still, he's still really a damn good team roping horse.
That is awesome.
One thing funny about Eddie though is he hugs everything to the right side. His right eye is good. And so like whenever uh-huh. he walks through a door, like he will rake you off of it just because he don't know yeah. what's over on the left side. He doesn't, yeah. It's really funny to watch. And whenever we're boarding him out here, he's pampered. Like, folks, I'm telling you, I'm living in this little horse trailer, some little living quarters, and Eddie's in a 65-degree barn in a stall. There's high school girls that come out. They're hired to come out. They comb him, put a blanket on him, put him out in pasture for the day. They bring him
he's
back
in. He's living the highlights.
Oh, he's loving it. He's got friends. Yeah, so he don't even pay attention to me no more. But so, yeah, I love hearing that somebody else just grabbed their stuff and took off to a land unknown, because I've done it so much, and mm-hmm. I find that really fascinating to talk to somebody else that has done it.
Yeah, it was a decision that I had come to the point that I had run out of road in Oklahoma, and it was either, you know, a now or never kind of thing. And I decided to do it, and I literally sold anything that I could to make any kind of money at all. I mean, I was pawning stuff. I took a toaster to the pawn shop and I was like, how much will y'all give me for this? And they were like, ma'am, we don't take toasters. I was like, you have to take the toaster, please.
Was it the eight slicer or what?
Oh no. Oh no.
Wasn't it was even the eight.
It was the four, regular old white one button push down, you know, nothing fancy. I think I probably got it for $12 at Walmart. And I was like, I need $24, double my money. Let's go.
That's hilarious. They were probably like, no, you're going to have to pay us to take that. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had a horse that I had bought at the time. I bought this little 2-year-old paint filly that I was breaking. And so I loaded her up and all my furniture. I wrapped all my furniture in plastic and put that in the horse trailer with her. And by furniture, I mean, I had a couch and a bed. And yeah, went to Nashville. I found this apartment in a barn on a ranch that I got hired to work at breaking colts for a guy and working cows.
How cool. So you showed up with a job.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I moved into the barn and I lived there for just a few months, 4 or 5 months. And then there was another house on the property that became available and I moved into the house. And, you know, I just did it and I didn't look back. I knew that I wanted a life change and I knew that I wanted to really give this a go and see what I was capable of and see if I could truly step into who I was created to be. And just, I didn't want to have any regrets. I didn't want to get to old Emily one day and look back and think, what if I would have tried harder? So I just really gave it all I had. And I was alone. I didn't know anybody. I had no friends. I did everything by myself. And when I first moved to town, the only places I knew how to get to were Walmart and Tractor Supply, which really that's all you need.
Yep.
But
yeah, dude.
Yeah. And I just went from there one day at a time.
Me and Tractor Supply go way back. I like it.
My one of my favorite stores. You know, I'm not one of those women that you take me to a mall and I'm like happy, but you take me to Tractor Supply or Cabela's, Bass Pro, just any Western wear, anything, I can do some damage.
I love it. And I love that they have the old-fashioned Coca-Cola. That was my grandfather's favorite. Yes. And every time I go, me and my daddy, we still get an old-fashioned Coca-Cola and a good old Snickers. And yeah.
You can't beat Coca-Colas and Snickers.
I'm telling
you. It's the best combo. Mm. I like to put mine in the fridge, eat it in layers.
Well, I love that you just picked up and went, and I think people need to hear that, is that, you know, you're not ever going to do anything big by staying comfortable and get out there, and it's really not as bad. It's actually so freeing. I feel sorry for somebody who's never had that experience of loading everything they got in one vehicle, which is really fun because you're limited, right? Things mm-hmm. get prioritized. Things get left mm-hmm. behind. It's just such a mm-hmm. great metaphor of life, and you got to pack in what you can, leave what you can't take, go to a new world. And I'm always fascinated by people that are like, well, I could never eat alone or like go to a movie alone. They mm-hmm. think, and I'm like, yeah. Phew, I've ate more meals alone and I've seen probably more movies alone than I've seen with people. And I want to encourage somebody, if they're listening right now, they're thinking to go do it, because you will grow and you'll have some of your happiest days and some of your worst, you'll have those mad cries where you're looking up at the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
why? Yeah.
But it's such an adventure and I love that you did that. So something we had in common. And were you welcomed by anybody at Nashville? Did you hit it off and make some good contacts?
Yeah. You know, when I first moved to town, the ranch that I lived and worked on, Tanya Tucker actually, boarded her horses there. So I had the opportunity to meet her and, she just was so sweet, so nice to me. And I love Tanya because she is just one of those rough around the edges women, and I feel like I'm a rough around the edges woman myself. So I just really liked her. And I mean, she invited me to Thanksgiving. She invited me for Taco Tuesdays, and I met, she's got three kids, and I became friends with her son, Grayson, and her daughter, Presley, and Layla. And they were all just very nice, very welcoming to me. And just kind of, you know, helped kind of just get me integrated a little bit.
Isn't it so cool whenever people that have a name or live up to actually what you think or are better than what you think they would be in real life?
So nice. And it wasn't, and they're not, a lot of people expect when they meet someone like this, oh my gosh, this is my big break. This is what it is. But, and they forget that they're just people too, you know, and meeting them and the kindness that they showed me really set the tone, I think, for me, because they didn't, you know, Tina's not involved in my career at all. You know, we've never, I'm not on tour with her or anything like that. But if I've ever had questions and she was around, she would answer them willingly. I would ask her questions about being on the road. And she has told me some freaking hilarious stories about stuff that she's, you know, been part of on the road and stuff that she's seen and just the glory days. And just hearing those stories just gives you hope, and it just puts a fire in your belly to just keep on keeping on and keep trucking. And
yeah, and I think that's what people like that realize, that they can't rob you of the hard work and the path to get you where you're, like, they can't just give it to you. And I get that all the time. I have multiple certifications in this industry, and I have people come up and they're wanting to become an inspector, get in this. And they're like, well, how do you do it? And I'm like, well, I'll tell them, like, you go to this place online, you order the books and you take the course and tests. And then they're like, well, do you have the books? You know, it's like,
No, you still got to go do it.
Yeah. So I'm happy to guide. And I think that's what we get so frustrated sometimes as humans, because we feel like people like that have made it in the world are supposed to just do it for us. And it's like, no, they can guide you and give you advice, but it's up to you to put on the boots, man, and go get it. So
I could not agree more. You're 100% correct. Before I got my deal, before I went full time with music and got my company started, I was waiting tables at a restaurant in Franklin called Gray's on Main. Can I give them a shout out?
Yeah, you can shout out anybody.
Gray's on Main is just this phenomenal restaurant. They offer dinner and live music, and it's just this, they call it upscale Southern cuisine. But as a matter of fact, if you ever come to Nashville, I'll take you, because they've got a whiskey and bourbon bar that is phenomenal and you'd like it. But I was working for them, and Philip Sweet from Little Big Town was in. We got a lot of country, big country names that would come in. And this man sat and had a 45-minute conversation with me. He did not have to do that at all.
How did you even make that interaction?
Yeah. So I was setting up for my shift. It was about 4:30 in the afternoon, and I was coming in and getting my section, getting all my tables ready. And it was just him and his wife and his daughter. And I sing constantly, so I'm just humming a song, singing my song or whatever while I'm getting my tables ready. And I had not noticed who he was. And I looked at him and I thought, dang, he looks so familiar. And I went up to one of my best friends, who was the manager at the time, and I said, that guy over at that table looks really familiar. And she started laughing, and she was like, Emily, that's Philip from Little Big Town. And I was like, oh shit, that's awesome. So I felt it appropriate, since no one else was up there. You know, you got to read the crowd, read your room. But I just went up to him and I said, and I introduced myself, and I just said, I'm a big fan and I love y'all stuff, and I just wanted to tell you that and hope you have a good afternoon. And his wife said, you know, Emily, would you like a picture? And I got to take my picture with him. And then she said, I'm going to let you guys talk. And she took their daughter, and I got to talk to him. And he later came back for Luke Bryan's birthday and brought me upstairs for Luke Bryan's private birthday party, introduced me to Luke Bryan, and said, this is Emily Elgin. Like, he's known me his whole life and not just 30 minutes. This is Emily Elgin, and she's got a beautiful voice, and she's going to make it, and she's going to do big things. And I just stood there and felt like, I could cry and I felt like $1 million. Just
how cool. I love
it
that.
It was amazing.
Was Luke Bryan cool?
I'll never forget it. So cool.
Was he?
So
okay, cool.
Like, yeah, I met him and his wife and they were just everybody so nice. And I, you know, on the scale of things on the totem pole, I'm like below the low man at that point. You know, I still am. I'm not, you know, anywhere higher up, but just to be treated so well by people that I've grown up listening to and have been such inspirations to me just floored me. Like I said before, it just really gives you that hope and that it just ignites your passion even more for what you're doing.
That's awesome. Well, I know our listeners are just wanting to hear more about you, but I have a funny story. I'm not trying to butt into your whole deal, but I've got to meet some famous people and it went surprisingly well. And I was so happy at the end of the day. You know, my father always told me that nobody's too good to not talk to you. And if they feel that they are, you didn't need to talk to them anyway. So always, you always have the right to go up and shake somebody's hand and say hi and just tell them
absolutely.
That you, like you did, just, hey, I appreciate what you do. And now don't expect much more, but you always have that right to go up. So I was in Aspen, Colorado, and I was eating dinner with a girlfriend at the time, and we were in this Italian place. It's very authentic Italian where it's like crammed together. I mean, the seats, the tables are small, and you could reach over and grab something off the other table if you want to.
Right.
And we're sitting there, and this couple comes in, and I look at this lady, and I knew her. I stood up. I was like, oh my gosh, how have you been? And about halfway through, how have you been? I realized, she don't know who I am. I'm lost. I don't know. I've had a moment. I don't know what's going on. She was so kind. She's like, well, hello, how are you? And I was like, I apologize. I thought I knew you. My name's Taos Hayes, and this is my girlfriend. And she introduced herself, and we sat down, and I'm like sitting there, and my girlfriend's talking to me, and it finally dawned on me. It was Aunt Becky from Full House. I had grown up, and it was...
You were kidding me.
No, it was Lori Loughlin. So
that's amazing.
And I love telling this story now because her name has been... she's gone through some issues and some troubles recently, but I will tell you, I look back at her, and I said, Miss Loughlin, I sincerely apologize. I grew up with you being my aunt that I thought I knew you, and I didn't... And she goes, don't even sweat it. I love that you're a fan. And she talked, and then she introduced me to her husband. And I was like, oh, sir, are you in the acting industry, the film industry? He goes, oh, I'm a designer. And I said, oh, you're designing. He's like, yeah, my stuff's in Target. So she's married to Massimo, the Massimo guy. Yeah. The brand in Target. Yeah. So my girlfriend goes, oh my God, I got your scarf on. And so she really did. He goes, oh yes. And they were so cool. They were on their 14th anniversary. I'll never forget it. And they were so kind and loving. And, Lori, if you ever hear this, just know you did make our day. And, even though there's all kinds of people that might, throw shame on your name because of whatever issues you're going through, you were absolutely kind and so much fun. And just invite everything. She answered every question. I didn't know this, but she told me that, she had already, like in typical Hollywood fashion, she was bumming a couch to sleep on, doing auditions and had, and was like days away from booking a flight back home before she landed the Full House, spot. So,
isn't that awesome to be able to talk to someone like that and they meet you with so much kindness? And because I feel like at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. And also the fact that she was sleeping on a couch as well. So many people's stories, mine included, start with those struggles. And kind of circling back to what you were talking about is people expect you to do it for them, but everybody that's made it, they've put in the work, and that's awesome. That's so awesome.
Well, I got one more, and I was in a store and a guy walked by and it is the same deal. I was like, man, I know that guy. And my aunt Jeannie was right there. And I said, hey, Aunt Jeannie, look at that guy. Don't we know that guy? And she goes, that's Kurt Russell. And I was like, holy shit, that's wider. I got to say hi. So I went up there.
I would die.
Yeah, and I went up, and I shook his hand and said hi and told him I was a big fan. And a really funny story is we were at this store, and there's only one register open. There's a line. We were waiting in line. And Kurt Russell, he was grabbing things by the armfuls. It's around Christmas, and he is putting them on an empty register, like a closed register counter.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got done. He just stood over there behind us. I mean, just the pile and pile of stuff. I mean, like, he'd go get like 12 Yeti cups, put them on. Then he'd just go get random stuff and just throw it on. And the lady running our register turned around and said, sir, that counter's closed. And he just like gave like the classiest, like, yeah, okay, thank you. And then about 2 minutes later, the manager came out and was like, oh, Mr. Russell, I'm so sorry, here, and just checked him out and got him on his way. And it was like,
I love that.
Must be nice to be a movie star. Goldie Hawn, you know, there are waiting perks on him.
So, there are perks.
Yeah.
There are.
So anyway, those were my stories. So I love that, one, that you had the courage to just go say hi. And I think people need to know that mm-hmm. Don't get in people's personal space. Don't overwhelm them with crazy. Be respectful. But
yeah,
these people survive because of you being a fan, and
right,
there's nothing wrong with saying hello.
There's not. It just, like you said, just be respectful because there's still people, and you know that.
Yeah. Have you ever,
you know,
had anybody that you couldn't muster up the words to even say hi? Or if not, who would be somebody that was in front of you that you was like, oh man, you'd be totally starstruck?
Brad Pitt.
Oh
yeah.
Oh my god, you mentioned that you love Dax Shepherdsdale, and I love Dax mainly because we share the same man crush, and that is Brad freaking Pitt. I mean it.
Oh
man.
My Lanta. I honestly
I would still be able to say hi because I would be starstruck and then motivated at the same. I would be like, I will never get this opportunity, and I would fanboy out, and I would just tell him
100%.
That, like, hey, can I have 2 minutes here so you can show me how to chew food? Because you chew food sexier than anybody I know.
He does. Though I could watch that man chew food for an hour and a half. I don't even care. I'd pay movie tickets. Let's go.
Hey, like I said, I think I've told you this already in our previous conversations, but if I could be on any movies or shows, the first movie, I'd have to be Doc Holliday on Tombstone. The show would be
one of my favorite movies. Yeah,
it's awesome. Tommy Shelby off of Peaky Blinders. I'd also want to be Ryan Gosling. If you've ever seen the movie Drive, you got to go see it. It's a odd, quirky movie, but he is so smooth. But Brad Pitt in Ocean's, whatever number you want to pick, he eats. All he does is look good and eat. And I'm like, that's the role I want right there.
How does he do it? I just don't understand. I've literally sat and thought about that very thing. Probably longer than I should.
Dude, the guy could make eating a Chipotle burrito look sexy, and I don't know how that's even possible. So
I don't get it either. He has a skill for sure.
That's awesome. Well, I saw George Strait, and I could not muster up the words. Like I saw him, and I left him alone. He had his hat pulled down really low. He kind of was just incognito in kind of the back corner of this little place. It was a PBR after party that I went to, I was like, man, he was so cool. But yeah, I couldn't muster up the words. A little starstruck. But
yeah, I haven't, you know, I'm always, I never want to miss an opportunity and then have regret. So that drives me a lot. I had an opportunity to meet Reba and because she would come into the restaurant that I worked at as well. And I've met her several times, and I think she just was everything that you would think Reba is. She is. She's amazing. I mean, when she left, she introduced me to her whole family, and they all gave me hugs. Like every single, there was like 12 of them, and they all gave me a hug. And I just, she's just,
well,
amazing,
I have an inside connection with Oreba. I kind of want her to be on this podcast. I want to keep aiming
for
that.
Do it.
So
do it.
Reba, if you're listening, we're coming after you. She's a
she's
a proud Oklahoman, man. She's awesome. Well,
yeah, she's
speaking
awesome.
Of speaking of opportunities, one thing I love after having conversations with you is you enjoy your mornings and you get up early and you sip a little coffee, mm-hmm. and that's kind of your creative time. And it's really funny because through high school and college, my grades were always exactly parallel with what time of the day they were in almost. I mean, like in my early classes were always the best. And as everybody's battling with anxiety and depression, I always tell people, man, like one, set a time in the morning to get up, get some food in you, and then try to do something physical and try to get a little sunlight. It always helps. And
absolutely.
So do you have a certain time you get up, and then what is your morning routine? How would you coach somebody up in being creative, hitting that creative outlet?
Yeah, I wake up between 6 and 7, sometimes 7:30. I don't set an alarm unless I have to be somewhere, you know, like early in the morning, then I'll set an alarm just in case. But I'll wake up in between 6 and 7, and I get up and make my coffee, feed all my animals, and then I have some quiet time, and I journal, and I spend time with God, and just thank Him for what I have and where I'm at, and take anything that I need to take to Him, and just center myself, and spend time with me. You know, that's my me time before I have to give so much of myself to the world. And then I get some exercise. I ride horses about 6 days a week, but just taking care of my body. I make a point to spend a lot of time outside. I am a very nature driven person. I have to spend time outdoors. It affects me mentally on a whole nother level if I don't. You know, I have way less anxiety and depression if I'm spending time outside, if every day if possible. And exercise as well. And I think that that is so important for a successful life, whether you're an artist or an entrepreneur of any kind, or, you know, if you work a 9-to-5 somewhere, it's taking care of yourself is so important, because without having those self-care moments and knowing what you need to function mentally, physically, and spiritually and emotionally, you can't give what needs to be given to the world without taking care of yourself first. So
I agree. And it kind of just goes along with that. Just get small, get simple, and enjoy, enjoy the little things. And we, after discussing yesterday, we both talked about a little bit about anxiety and depression. And then we also
absolutely
falls right into politics. And we agreed we wouldn't talk politics, which we never do on here. That's not our aim at all. But I always tell people that everybody wants to change the world, but nobody's wanting to change out the toilet paper roll. And I think it's just a good ode to, you know, if you're going through some struggles, get small, get simple, and really work on yourself, and hug the ones around you, love the ones right around you. And I'm telling you, stop opening up Facebook, because it'll just piss you off.
It does. And, you know, speaking of social media, that's something that I struggled with for a long time, because social media is my job. It's a large part of my job. And I have now gotten to where, you know, I can get on it for work, and then I put it down so it doesn't consume my life. But when I first started, it was really just, it would get me really worked up. And, you know, you get people on there that say bad comments and are negative to you, send you mean messages, but you also get people that are amazing and supportive and lovely as well. So, I mean, it's a double-edged sword, but you just take the good with the bad with all of that. But, back to your previous point, I think that self-care is so, so important, because we all deal with anxiety and depression on some level. I mean, I know I have. I've had my struggles, and just learning how to use the tools in your tool belt to set yourself up for success is key.
I agree. Well, I've also learned that you had a little wild side to you growing up. Is this true? Is this you kind of was a little troublemaker growing up? And we don't have to dive into all of it. And I think what we want to pull out for the listeners, though, is you know, what kind of your experience was, and then if there's somebody else kind of going through hard times like that, trying to make sense of it, if you'd have any advice. So can you kind of tell us what kind of trouble were you getting into, Emily?
Well, first of all, I like how you said to try to make sense of it. And I think that would be my advice, is to slow down and make sense of your life. I just flew by the seat of my pants, you know, and my saying myself and others was, I do what I want. You know, I'll do what I want. I was very rebellious. And
does that come with the red hair? Like, is that what that is? Cause I've heard y'all don't have a soul.
Well, you know, I mean, it's debatable. It is. It really is. There's been all sorts of questions on that.
I'm telling you,
I'll never tell my secret. Woo. No,
yeah.
I will tell you, I feel personally responsible for the majority of my dad's gray hair.
100%. I bet.
He was, yeah.
I bet.
But no, you know, I was just rebellious. I wasn't as a little kid, but once I got into my, I would say probably junior, senior year of high school, and then really my beyond, I started getting into some trouble, that led to some, arrests and going to jail a couple times.
Oh, you've been a jailbird?
Yeah. Yeah.
I went to jail once.
Yes. Have you?
Yeah, I got punched in the face, and they took me to jail.
Well, what'd you do?
I was just with a pretty girl.
Uh-huh. I'm sure you're.
That's all it was.
Totally innocent.
Yeah. Absolutely, very innocent. And I'll never forget. Me and my cousin. There's multiple cousins involved here. I really did get punched in the face. And by the way, just a warning: if anybody out here is like saying, "Hey, Talis is telling this story because he thinks he's a badass," let me tell you. I know for a fact I'm not the badass at my own dinner table when I sit around my family. My family is very tough, and we have a wonderful relationship because they know they can kick my ass, and I know it too. But I will tell you, if anybody's out there that does want it, I do have a very punchable face, come to find out. This is not the first time this has happened. Yeah, I have that face that people are just like, you know, that guy needs
he
a black eye.
He deserves to be punched.
He does. Like, that nose is not crooked enough. Or maybe they're trying to line it out. But I will tell you, wherever I'm at, there's usually three or four other Hayes's around, and they are mean as there's a reason why I'm kind, and I can talk my way out of things because I grew up with some very tough, mean suckers. So that's what happened that night. I was with the girl. A guy wanted to take her dancing more than she wanted to go, I guess. And I said a few choice words. Believe it or not, my mouth got me in trouble. I know you can't believe.
Really?
That. Couldn't
that's
believe
hard it. To hard to believe. Yeah.
Got punched in the face. And it was really weird. By the time I got punched in the face, I looked back. The guy's on the ground. I reached down. He had long hair. I remember I reached down, grabbed a handful of hair, and popped him. And then I noticed like there's blood everywhere. There's blood everywhere. Like this dude was knocked down. By the time a bouncer grabs me, my other cousin's kicking this dude on the ground, and we get hauled out. And the guy's like, "You're kicked out." I was like, "I wanted to leave anyway." and then this bouncer tosses me out the door, and there's 10 cops just shoulder to shoulder.
No.
And he goes, "This is the guy right here." And they jumped on me and my cousin, and my cousin Cody, which I love him to death. He is a ride or die man, but he had had a little more to drink than me. And I'll never forget this cop. She is a lady cop. She had him handcuffed on the ground and had her knee in the small of his back just all her weight on it, and he's yelling, "I'm the victim! I'm the victim!" yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, so everybody that believes in white privilege and all that, man, and that it wasn't working out for us that night at all. These
that's
cops,
hilarious.
They
the victim.
We came out with some bruises and bumps, and got hauled to jail. And then my best friend's wife, she still has the picture. She had to pick us up the next morning. And, but yeah, I got to spend a little time in jail, and I don't know how anybody does it. I would have to hang myself because I did 8 hours in there. You couldn't see a
that
clock.
Was enough, wasn't it?
Yeah. I did 8 hours. Yeah. You couldn't see a clock. And also like if you're in Stillwater, Oklahoma, they don't put you in a drunk take. And most people are like scared of a drunk being thrown in random people. I was isolated, and I am not an isolated type of person. I was begging for attention. I was yelling at other inmates just to say like, "Say hi." Like I was like, "Hey, where are you from?" You know, so I
oh,
anyway.
I can't with you. That's hilarious.
But yeah, so you got to do a little jail time.
I did. I've been I've been to jail numerous times, and first the majority of it was just stupid stuff. For example, I'd bought a car, and I was really broke, and I couldn't afford to get the tags, so I had my paper tag.
Oh. Yeah.
So in my mind, I'm like, hey, you know what? I'll just get a black Sharpie marker and alter these tags, alter the dates, and just ride around for longer until I can afford to buy these tags, so you know I don't get pulled over. Well, anyways, turns out if you make an illegal turn and a cop pulls you over on that, then they run your numbers and the numbers don't match up to what's being ran. That's super illegal.
Yeah.
I thought I was a genius. So turns out I wasn't, but cop gets out and he was like, Miss Elgin, did you alter your paper tags? And I said, no. And he said, Miss Elgin. And I said, yes. And he said, did you alter your paper tags? And I said, yes, sir. And he goes, you know, these are some of the better ones that I've seen. How'd you do it? And I said, oh, well, I went to Walmart and I got me this magic marker, but you have to get this one, like the big fat ones, because the skinny ones just don't work. And he said, so you've done this before? And I said, yes, sir. And he said, oh, okay. And he said, but seriously, I mean, these look really good. And I said, well, awesome. So does this mean like I don't get a ticket? And then he starts laughing and I start laughing, and then he gets out his handcuffs and he goes, no, you're going to jail. I was like, oh no.
Gosh. Said,
you know, put your hands behind your back like you're praying. I was like, damn it. Can I get a phone call? But that was kind of a funny time that I went. And that time I went to, that was in Edmond, Oklahoma. And I can tell you firsthand, Edmond, Oklahoma jail is so nice. I mean, you get your own cell, everything super clean. They give you microwavable dinners.
What?
Versus, oh yeah, that's nice. Versus like Oklahoma County, where you get a bologna sandwich in a wet paper bag.
Oh man, that is funny. Oh man, yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're not in jail anymore. And
you know, honestly, what's funny about jail and all of those things, like I did live a rougher lifestyle for many years, and a lot of people don't know that about me. They see the me now and they think I've always had my shit together. Mm-hmm. And I did not, and I will be the first to admit that, and I don't mind sharing that, because I see so many other young people that are in the same situation and they don't realize that it doesn't have to be that way. The last time I was arrested was in 2014, and I was sitting in Oklahoma County Jail, and you know, I was in, they put me up in GP, general population. Also, orange is really not my color. I don't look good in it at all. But I'm sitting there and I'm singing to some of the other girls, and I just remember thinking, what the fuck am I doing? What am I doing? Is this the kind of life you want? But like, is this what you want? Because this is what you're going to get. So get used to it. If this is what you want, you better just accept it now or do something about it. And I made my mind up then and there. I said, God, if I can get another chance, like I'll quit this. I will quit it. And I will work as hard as I can to get myself out of this hole that I have dug. And a year later, I was in Nashville, because it took me probably a year to get all my court stuff fixed and attorneys, and, you know, because I had been in so much trouble on and off for so many years, it takes a long time. And honestly, it took me several years after I moved to Nashville to finally get the last of all of that in order. But man, that the day that I got all of that stuff done just really felt good for me, and it really made me feel accomplished. And if I can do that, anybody that's listening to this, if you're in that situation, if you're not happy with your life, whether you've made poor life decisions and you're in that type of lifestyle that I was, or you find yourself somewhere else and you're not happy, you have the power to change that. And that's what I want to be able to convey with my story and my journey and my success through my career, is that I came from nothing, you know, and I made bad decisions and I was in jail, and I'm just continued to make bad decisions for years and struggled. And life doesn't have to be a struggle. Happiness is not hard to find. If you just surround yourself with good people, you don't lie, you don't cheat, and you don't steal. And I mean, life can be really, really good. It's just, you got to put in the work.
I love that. And that's why I want you to be successful, because we need that. We need that breath of fresh air. We need to see somebody that came from nothing and made something of themselves. So I'm totally absolutely pumped for you. And that kind of gets us into your music. And
yeah,
I love your music. I wanted to say that I'm supposed to say that because you're on my podcast, right? But
it'd be weird if you didn't.
It would be weird if I didn't. But I would like the listeners to go and check out your music for themselves, because we all know those musicians, as I'm, like quoting, hand quoting here, air quotes, that are trying to make it, and you're like, you're just looking around like, yeah, like you got this, and yeah, and then when they leave, you kind of like look around and go, is anybody going to tell them that they don't have a voice, they can't carry pitch? When I turned on your music, your voice is absolutely unique and phenomenal, and I loved it.
Thank you.
Your music is easy to listen to. Wildfire, I mentioned, was my favorite. Who played the guitar in that? Because I love, just as much as your voice, I love the music, the guitar.
Yeah. Part. Thank you so much. First of all, that means a lot to me. The man that played guitar on that, his name is Rob McNally, and he is phenomenal. I would say arguably he's top three players in the country. He's won several ACMs. He's won best guitar player of the year. He's just phenomenal. And he's hilarious. Like, the dude is funnier than the day is long. And we just really hit it off, and he made my experience at the studio just so much fun. And all of the guys did, really. Him, Derek Phillips, who plays drums. Derek actually is Brett Eldridge's drummer. And we have this ongoing joke between him and I, because I always say that I have a crush on Brett Eldridge, and I'm like, introduce me. And so I'll, you know, comment on his stuff, and it's just really funny. But,
but it's real. It's funny, but it's real.
I think it's fading. I know Brett's going to be really disappointed about that, you know, but.
Oh, man. I love that.
But yeah, just the musicians here and the people that I've had an opportunity to work with and play with.
How cool.
I never in a million years would have thought that I would have these opportunities.
Well, it's well produced. The music is right on. And Wildfire, I think, it's kind of a summertime fling. Am I wrong by saying that? Is that,
it is. Just, it is. It's just a nostalgia about, you know, summer love. And
that's,
I think,
right,
that we all experience that. And but I like that how you said it was well produced. I agree. Eric Torres is the guy that produced that. He is just phenomenal. I will love him for the rest of my life. He made working on that so easy. He was just so comfortable and so professional, and just was really good at communicating to everyone else my thoughts and feelings and my vibe of what I was trying to accomplish. And specifically with Wildfire, because that we actually, I had a bridge to that song. And while we were tracking, Eric stopped and he said, and Emily, you know, I just don't feel like this bridge needs to be said. And I had been thinking the same thing, but hadn't said anything. And so we cut it from the song, and I'm so glad we did, because I love the way that it turned out.
Ah, I love it. That's my favorite. Let's dig into the hard, very personal song, Muddy Water, for you. I know that we had discussed that you are actually raised in some domestic violence. You experienced that.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of poured your heart out into this song. And we don't have to hit on that a lot. I would love for people to go listen to the song and see what they get out of it. I don't want to, we kind of discussed this, but I don't want to put you in an odd spot to talk about your past and
yeah,
the domestic violence,
no,
but,
not at all.
Would you kind of shed light on the inspiration behind the song? And then, you know, if anybody else that's listening is in that spot, what your advice would be?
Yeah, absolutely. So I, you know, my parents divorced when I was young, and when they split with my mama remarried, and that's when the domestic violence started. I do want to be clear that it was not my dad. I'm super close with my daddy. Like all my Lanta, I love that man more than peanut butter and jellies. I just love him so much. But so being raised in that environment obviously was very difficult. And that's a lot of the vast majority of people that know me don't know that. Even people that grew up with me had no idea. But it was bad. And bled into my adult life, my young adult life. And whenever I got to Nashville, I had this idea to write this song. And it really came from a place of, because I was raised in that environment, I had no control and I had a lot of fear and I was powerless. I was able to take those feelings and put it into a song that when I sing it, I am in full control and I feel powerful. And this song brought a lot of healing for me to be able to sing it and just shed light on it, because so many people go through this, men and women, you know. And when I first brought this idea, I brought this idea to a co-write with a writer who I'm not going to name his name, but when I went into it, I said, hey, I've got this idea. This is the vibe. Here are some lyrics. And he looked at me and he said, no, I'm not going to write this. And I said, well, why not? And he said, nobody's going to want to hear this shit. And I said, all right, cool. And so we worked on some other song that we never even got done. And I took to two of my really good friends who I've ended up now, we've been writing together for 5 years and we've written some amazing music. And their names are Brian Henderson and Spencer Askew. And I brought this idea to them and they loved it immediately. And we sat out on my back porch on the ranch during a summer day with the birds chirping and horses out grazing and just beautiful weather, and got vulnerable. And they asked me tough questions and we wrote this song. And it's been one of my most well-received songs. From women, you know, women will come up to me after shows and just say, that song was amazing. And, you know, not everyone is going to be able to resonate with that. And that's okay. And honestly, I hope they can't. But for the ones that can, you know, I think that it can just give some, I don't know, some strength to. It's a strong song. It's a powerful song. So,
Yeah,
there's definitely light at the end of the tunnel with that. And it to come full circle with it, I think it's important to say that when you are a child, if you're raised in those environments, yes, you are a victim of your circumstance until you get to a certain age. And then you no longer are, because you have the choices to leave or to do whatever you need to do to get yourself out. And that is always a choice that you can make, regardless of how you feel. If you feel scared, if you feel like you can't, that's just a feeling. And that's a lie, because you can always change your situation and your circumstance. And there's programs and there's just a bajillion things out in the world that are available for people to get out of those situations. So,
well, I love that. Yeah. And I hate that you had to go through that. I've never experienced anything like that, but I do have a very strong mother who didn't have the best childhood. I think my mom doesn't really talk about it. I just know her very, very well. I'm very close to my mom. We've had I've taken her to many pedicures.
I love it.
Yeah. And, but my mom just has that grit about her that you just around her and you can feel, man, this woman's been through some things. And I think anybody that's experiencing violence and things like that, you can still do great things and you can have wonderful, amazing babies one day and they'll do big things. So at least my mom did, I like to think.
well, I agree. It's just,
yeah, go ahead.
It's about overcoming, you know. It just comes back down to choices. And for a long time, I can speak for myself, I did live in that victim mentality of, well, I'm like this because this happened to me, or I make these decisions because this is how I was raised, or this or that or whatever. And I was having a conversation with a woman who I hold in very high esteem here in Nashville. She owns several multi-million dollar companies, is extremely successful. And she had, I mean, she makes my childhood look like a walk in the park. And I told her one time, I said, well, you know, I think I made this decision recently because of XYZ, because this and this and this. And she said, Emily, nobody gives a shit. And I said, what? What? And it kind of pissed me off. And I said, well, what do you mean? And she said, after you get to a certain age, nobody gives a shit. Your past is on you, and it is your responsibility to fix it, fix you, and be the best version of you that you can be. It is on nobody else's shoulders but your own. So if you're making decisions and you're making excuses for your decisions, that's on you. And I couldn't agree more with that.
I love sometimes those hard hitting things that, and that's what's so funny is sometimes when things hit that hard, you don't like it right then. It's like eating a shit sandwich. It's not good. But after you leave and you dwell on it and you go, gosh, dang it. It hurt because it was right. Yeah. It was spot on. And I love that. And
I'm a big fan of tough love. I wanted to say one thing about circle back around to your mama, because I thought it was so funny that we had talked about in a previous conversation. And I think I saw this either on your TikTok or maybe I heard it on another one of your podcasts, but you were talking about how your mom had cropped pictures of you, you and ex-girlfriends, because they were just really good pictures of you, and she had cropped him out. And I thought that was hilarious, because that's something that like my dad would do.
Well, I will tell y'all, and I don't know if other families know this, but if you are the single guy and you happen to have a girlfriend at the time, you're forever going to be the second from the left in every photo, because my mom sticks them on the end, so they're easier to crop out later.
Oh, so funny.
Yeah, she cracks me up, and it isn't about, and it truly isn't, and I love this about my mom, and that's what I think her hard times present, what she's learned how to do, and I've learned from her, and that is we cherish those people that come in and out of our life, but you don't need a daily reminder that they were there, and it's not about them. And it's not about you right now. It's about the future you. And I tell you, the future you and the future person you deserve to be with doesn't need to walk in at Christmas and see pictures of you with an ex. It just don't need to.
Oh, yeah. That's not good. I completely agree. Yeah. I completely agree. Absolutely. And just because somebody is in your life or was in your life, it doesn't mean they are meant to be there for the long haul. You learn something from every relationship, in my opinion, or you should.
I will go out on a limb and I'm gonna ruffle some feathers here. But if you still have an ex posted on your Instagram, you are not ready for the next relationship. I firmly believe this, and a lot of people don't, and you might disagree as well. And I'd love to go into that. But I have always found when dating people, if they're reaching out to me and I go to their Instagram and they still have pictures of their ex up, I'm like, what's this for? And they're like, oh, well, that was a special time in my life. I was like, okay, archive that shit, print it off, put it in a shoebox, have a good night, light some candles, get them out. Remember, nobody on this earth is going through your page and going, I wonder what kind of hot guy she used to date, and go look, you know, or, oh my gosh, she looks so happy there. I bet she's happier now though with this new, it's nobody wants to see that shit ever. And just put it away. And I'm not saying you got to delete them people from your life, because I got exes that were very cordial. And we were like, hey, like, you're awesome. You're awesome. We're not going to work out.
Yeah.
Go on our own way. I would call them today. They're very fun people. And I save some of those photos in an archive deal, where I do like to go down memory lane, maybe. The world don't need it. So check yourself. And if you disagree, write me at talis@cardigancowboy.com. I would love to hear your opinion.
I would love to hear that as well. Because I've had this exact same conversation. That's so funny that you brought that up, because I agree with you. And I have been met with a lot of, well, you know, I can't erase them from my life. And I don't think you should erase them from your life. But if you're still looking at pictures all the time, and that's, they're not removed from your life, they're still current. They're an ex, but they're still current.
Yeah.
If you're, because you're allowing it. So
And you have these special moments of people that you post. And then whenever it doesn't work out, the next person, your soulmate, is going to go look at that. And mm-hmm. I don't want to remember when you dated Brad and went to Tulum. Like, I don't need to know. I don't give a shit. Like, I don't want to see that. I don't want to compare. Now, anytime, like, you were with Gary in Las Vegas. Oh, had a blast getting champagne. It's like, now every time we go to Vegas, I'm just like, oh, is this like Gary? Am I doing what Gary did? You know? So,
my only question of all that, where's Tulum? What is that?
Tulum?
Yeah.
It is a hot spot south of Cancun. Mexico.
Well, I'm bad at geography and I've really never been anywhere. So,
sweetheart, we got to get you out. We got to get you out, man. Yeah. Tulum is wonderful, but it's better with, I want to feel like it's better with me than Brad. So, yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
So Karen, we get it. You dated somebody hot. We doubt mm-hmm. you'll ever outdo that, but whatever.
Yep.
Take it down. So, Muddy Water, we discussed that. And mm-hmm. then I wanted to go to this woman is the song name, right? This Woman?
Yes.
And
yes.
I wrote here on my notes that is the Bear Rug song.
Mm-hmm.
Break out the Bear Rug. That's kind of our family. You know, if you're going to go make babies, you break out the Bear Rug. Uh-huh. Would you agree?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
I've never heard anybody call it that before.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's all cool. I dated a girl though. She wanted the bear rug and the bear claw. And I thought this is going to get weird, and come to find out that was just the name of her favorite donut. So it did get weird, but, no, I love that song. It's very sweet. And then you have a song called Don't Come Knocking. And mm-hmm. it's about like, don't come back, that don't come back song. And I laughed to myself mm-hmm. because I've been in that relationship where we mm-hmm. went from, this woman to Don't Come Knocking multiple times. And sometimes, after saying Don't Come Knocking, the this woman bear rug was really nice, better after
mm-hmm.
toxic relationships. But I love your songs, and they hit about every aspect of a relationship, or going through a relationship, I think is what I'm trying to say. You got the summer love, you got the bear rug song, and then you got mm-hmm. the get the hell out of here, don't come back song.
Yeah, that one's a fun one.
Yeah.
It is. That's a really fun one. I actually
go ahead.
I had a funny story about Don't Come Knocking. I was actually dating a guy at the time that I wrote that song, and we'd been dating for not a very long time, but you know, couple months, like 2 months or so. And I had found out that he was also not dating just me.
That is tough. That's a tough.
Yeah.
Come to find out, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And so anyways, not to get into a lot of the details, but long story short, I found out. So I confronted him, and he was actually also working on the ranch that I was at the time. And I was, he was sitting on a four wheeler and I was on another four wheeler, but I had gotten off of it and I was standing up, and he was kind of on a hill on the downhill. So I was like looking down at him, and like, he just looked so sheepish. I remember thinking how small he looked, and he was a big guy. And I just remember thinking how small he looked, and I was pissed.
I hope you told him too.
I really tore him up one side and down the other and just ended it under, I mean, I was very clear. And he took a big breath and he went, he just sighed this big, huge sigh. And he kind of looks down at his boots, and then he looks back up at me and he goes, you're not going to write about this, are you? And I said some other choice words, and I got on my four wheeler and went back home and went straight to Nashville to this song write that I had already had planned. And this is what we wrote. So,
that's so cool. Well, yeah, Taylor really Swift funny. Would be proud.
I know. I thought so.
Well, that kind of wraps up, everything that I've gone through that I really wanted to talk about. I wanted people to really take away, and this might be funny or embarrassing for you, but in our previous conversations, you told me about your sweet ride to Nashville and how you got there. And I think people need to hear this. You talk about roughing it and coming from nothing. You told me that you had a vehicle, a sedan, that was beat up. The windows were shot out of it. You didn't have enough money to repair all the windows, and it had no AC. And on your way to Nashville, you would take ice packs. You'd put a shirt on, take ice packs, and kind of strap them on you, and then put a shirt over it so you'd be cool all the way to Nashville. Is this true? And also, just what a great example of, like, do what you got to do to get there. And I just loved that. And I thought there's some value in that, man, like, who takes a shot up car with ice packs? I could just imagine an officer pulling you over and you're like,
oh, my Lanta.
You got ice packs strapped to you.
So that's true. I had this 2007 Ford 500 sedan that it was just a piece of crap when I bought it. And then just really deteriorated because I had it for several years. And I also didn't have a pickup, and I was working this ranch job. So I would treat this car. I'd have it out in the pastures loaded down with feed and hay and just craziness. So anyways, I didn't have an AC. And you were correct. Before I moved to Nashville, I lived on the south side of Oklahoma City, which can get a little rough. And there was a drive-by shooting, and somebody came by and shot up all these cars, and my car was in the line of fire, and all of the windows got shot out. And I didn't have enough money to replace everything, so I just replaced the main windows, but I left my windshield because the bullet holes were they weren't in your line of sight, so it's still legal. You can legally drive it. So I had two or three bullet holes in with a big crack all the way across my windshield. I didn't have AC, and it gets hotter than blue blazes here in Nashville. It's just super humid. And I was having to go back and forth from Nashville to the ranch. And I lived about 35, 40 minutes from Nashville. And I couldn't show up to these meetings with these riders and, like, being all stinky and sweaty. Like, I can't be that girl walking in smelling like a water buffalo. Like, that's embarrassing. So I went to Dollar Tree and I got me six of those dollar ice packs. And I would bring my shirt, whatever shirt I was going to wear with me. I'd bring my shirt with me and put it in my car. And then I would just be in, like, my sports bra, and I would put two packs on my chest, one on my belly, and then three on my back. And I would wrap myself in a body towel. And I would drive to Nashville. And then when I get there, I just, like, take it all off real quick and hurry up and throw on my shirt, because I didn't even have tinted windows or anything. And I'm just, like, trying to get dressed real quick. And then I'd bebop myself all the way in there and just act like I didn't just do that. And rolling with AC like normal people.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
I did that
love
for a
story.
Whole summer. Mm-hmm.
How cool. Well, how can people find you and find your music?
Yeah. So I have a website. It's emilyelginmusic.com. And, you know, it's a pretty cool website, just my music's on there and just learning about me and things like that and pictures. And then you can find my music on all of the streaming platforms. However you stream music, it's on there, whether it's Spotify, iTunes, Apple, Google, YouTube, whatever it is. And then I'm on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok. I do a lot on TikTok because I love that app and it's so much fun.
What a blessing that app is. I'm telling you, anybody that makes fun of TikTok, I'm like, man, it has been the biggest blessing. I don't know how to tell people. We went from like 200, 300 followers on Instagram to we're nearing the 2000 range just because of TikTok. Cause there's a link, you know, you can go see the videos, and it's a great way to express yourself.
It is. And it's so much fun. And I love it. You know, I think TikTok is fun, and I do music stuff on there, but I also do silly stuff because a lot of stuff with my horses and all of those things as well. And it just kind of shows a different side of me and who I am. And like you said, it lets you express yourself. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, I got famous on TikTok by talking about my wiener. So if I can make it, anybody can.
Yeah. You're just giving hope to everybody. Everybody's going to get on TikTok.
Yeah, I absolutely
can make it big.
Exactly. I was working. It's just me and this guy. And I said, dude, just walk in and be like, did I just hear you say you're self-conscious about your wiener? And he did it. And I said, yeah. And he said, why would you say that? And I said, that makes my legs look small. And I posted it on TikTok. It was my third video ever. I had nobody following me on TikTok, nothing. Like, I was just doing it because I was addicted like everybody else watching videos. Mm-hmm. I never got it to actually put videos out. And it was like 3 weeks later, all of a sudden my phone's sitting, I'm in a corporate meeting, my phone's blown up with TikTok notifications. And I'm like, what is going on? And overnight, mm-hmm. it got almost mm-hmm. a million views and just blew up. And then somebody reached out to me and was like, hey, we love your podcast. We love what you're doing. And your TikTok's going big. You need to keep putting out material. So it just keeps mm-hmm. that algorithm going. And so here we are. And now we're kind of, I kiddingly say I TikTok famous because I have maybe 19,000 followers and I think I'm a big deal. But yeah, which is not the case. But yeah, TikTok's good.
It's a good feeling when that starts happening. You know, I've had a couple of mine hit pretty big as well. And it's just, especially when you're working, you're in the industry, whether you're working your TikTok or you're working your podcast or whatever it is, but when one of your social media platforms hits, it's just such a good feeling. It's kind of a validation of, hey, oh good, people like what I'm doing and I can continue to do it. And it just validates your art and whatever you're trying to push. So that's exciting.
It is exciting. And I am such a numbers person. I have a numbers mind. And so social media, it does have this blessing of putting things into numbers, which can be very addicting and sometimes very disheartening. But on the flip side, it really does show the progress mm-hmm. and it's mm-hmm. scalable. And I really like that. And
yeah,
but
it is.
Watch out for those Karens out there. They're real. They're live. I got chewed out. I got three good thumb swipes worth of a paragraph about how I'm using women's platform to boost myself and not reaching back. And so they're real, man. Criticism's yeah. real. And
it is. And yeah. you know, I get a lot of it as well. I've got some just downright hateful, nasty messages. And they used to really bother me when I first started doing this, probably my first year of really getting started. They really, really bothered me. And I tend to be an emotionally driven person. So my first instinct is to clap back and run my mouth and say whatever it is I want to say. But I decided a long time ago that I was going to do things differently and not do that. Now, every once in a while, somebody will say something just stupid and I'll kind of say, hey, you know, this or this. But it's always in a way of it's funny and it's never disrespectful. But if anyone ever posts something just blatantly rude or disrespectful on my pages and I can delete it, I just delete it because it's not worth my time and energy. I'm focusing so much on moving forward. I'm not going to put energy into someone that's trying to hold me back. And that's on them too. And I feel sorry for them. Legitimately, my heart goes out to them because they're hurting. There's something within them that is not whole for them to want to reach out and just insert themselves into other people's lives like that.
I agree. And dealing with criticism is something we all have to learn, especially if you're going to put yourself out there in the creative world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just flat out people not going to like it. And they're flat out. Mm-hmm. Not, you can't please everyone. And
absolutely. Art is subjective. There's going to be a million people that like it and a million and one that won't. It's just, if you like it, you just keep putting out what you're putting out and some people will pick it up and some people won't.
Well, out of this, I hope our listeners take from it that they can get through anything and nothing can hold you back and get small, mm-hmm. get simple and do big things. Also,
absolutely.
I want to tell you, I am in Minnesota right now, but whenever we get back home in about 10 months, we get back home, get by the studio, please, whenever you're in Oklahoma, come see us again. We'll get you in the studio and we'll do this again with the whiskey in our hands and fireside, yes. and hang out.
Count me in. I'm so down. That would be a blast.
Yeah. I also want to give a shout out. I have a really good friend who's going to be on the show. His name's Luke Christensen, and shout out to Luke. He won Songwriter of the Year in Texas. He beat out about 3,000 contestants, and I would really like to get you guys together. He's got a cool vibe. And something I love about Luke is he's supporting other people around him. Like he mm-hmm. totally supports this podcast. He loves this. He invites me. He lets me go backstage.
That's awesome.
I'm with the band, right? So he's so cool. And then what I love about him and something that I feel from you as well is you guys are really loving the journey. Like there's not a mm-hmm. minute. There's not a minute. I went and seen Luke not too long ago. Bars are kind of open. We're halfway open in Oklahoma. Like they closed down at 11, but I went to go watch him play at this little bar. There might've been 12 people there total. And he was so happy and so grateful mm-hmm. that everybody mm-hmm. was there. And he's played for 2,000-3,000 people at a time. And, mm-hmm. but I love seeing people that are in love with the journey more than the end result. And Luke's yeah. that way. And so I would love to get you guys together. And we go do
that.
Something. There's an amazing cigar bar called Platinum Cigar Lounge, I think, in Bartlesville that he plays at quite a bit. And I would love to take you and just you meet him. And
that would be amazing. Yes. Yeah,
you guys would vibe for sure.
In.
So thank you, Emily. Is there anything else you want to add or before we sign off here? Did I miss something?
Well, I just wanted to thank Paul Stanley for connecting us. And
we about forgot
yeah,
Paul.
Yeah, Paul is, for those of you who are listening, he's also another podcaster and he's a really good personal friend of mine. And he and I do some work together and he kind of connected Taos and I. And I just wanted to thank him for that because he is just the coolest guy. And I think you guys have talked a little bit about doing some collaborations as well.
Absolutely.
Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. And that's where, whenever we were talking about Nashville, I meant to add that that's where I was going to talk about Paul because Paul, you, and two other people. I just was on a podcast out of Nashville the other day as well. It's calling my name. I got to come see you guys. And
yeah,
Paul had this whole itinerary already, which just that makes my heart so warm because just like you, I have shown up in so many towns and cities mm-hmm. by myself, not know a soul. So for the fact that mm-hmm. somebody has never met you and they're already like, we're going to go do this and I'm going to show
yes.
you this and you got to check
yeah.
out this and you're going to eat this with this sauce on it and you're going to love it.
Yeah.
And that is my favorite. Anthony Bourdain's one of my heroes. So I love getting mm-hmm. that Anthony Bourdain treatment mm-hmm. of showing up in town and
yes.
being escorted around.
Yeah.
So Paul Stanley, thank you. And I have a weird feeling that that's going to be a friendship that's going to last a long time. He is such a genuine person. And shout out to his podcast. Is it the Americana podcast?
No, it's called Southern Americana.
Southern Americana.
And,
yes.
Mm-hmm. And it just is brings together, you know, people, places, things, music of the South, essentially. And it's a really cool podcast. And
yeah.
he is the one, I mean, when you come to town, he'll be like, all right, we got this and this and this. And he's just, Paul's so much fun. And I think very highly of him.
Yes. I hope, man, I just can't wait to hug that guy's neck and hang out with him because am I wrong by saying like, he makes you feel like $1 million bucks. Like you just
mm-hmm.
like, you talk to him, you're
mm-hmm.
like, gosh, we got this. We're going to do big things. You're right, Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it. I'm ready to put on the armor.
Yes. He's very inspirational and motivational. And he, like I said, we do some work. He does some work with me, with my music stuff. And he'll send me messages, you know, in the morning because he knows I get up early for chores. And he'll be like, all right, so this, and this today. And I'm like, all right, let's go. You know, let's do it. So he's a great, great person to have in your corner.
Thank you for reminding me. I've got him wrote down here and I don't know how I skipped over him. So thank you for reminding me that. And is there anything else? Ms. Eldrin?
No. Well, I just wanted to thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. This has been so much fun for me. And I love what you're doing. I love the embodiment of the cowboy spirit, because I feel like so many more people need to be aware of what it truly is. And I feel that you're really bringing awareness to that. And I love everything that you're doing. I love the Cardigan Cowboy, and I'm super excited to have had the opportunity to be part of it. It's super exciting.
Well, we're excited, and we can't wait to have you on again. So thank you. And if that's it, Miss Emily, I just want to tell the listeners, you know, go, if you find value in this, we love feedback. Like we had mentioned, everybody's quick to give negative feedback, but we love positive feedback. If you find this valuable, hit us up on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, email, whatever, find us. And then go listen to Emily. It's you got the voice of an angel. So go check her out. She's going to do big things. And you can always say, hey, I knew of her before she was big, a real big deal. So I truly think you're going to make it big. So
thank you.
Well, thank you, Emily. And just stick tight here and I'll hit the record button, get us off, and then we'll chat a little bit.
All right. Sounds good.
You're awesome.